Hi, and welcome back. I'm Jeanette Bishops, and this episode of Performance Talks was recorded over the summer when I popped into the office of Limor Tomer, the Lulu C and Anthony W. Wang General Manager of Life Arts at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, to hear about the evolution of life arts programming at the Met, how she navigates programming life art in a historical museum, and how she's looking forward to the performance program during the exhibition Flight into Egypt, opening on November 17. In a first for the Met, performance will be an integral part of an exhibition in the form of a dedicated gallery. The performance pyramid will both present a documentary history of Black performance art incorporating ancient Egyptian themes and host live performances throughout the run of the exhibition. I really hope you enjoy my conversation with Limor as much as I did.
When I was hired as the general manager for an area of education department, of the education department called the Concerts and Lectures Department. And it was basically real estate based. So the role was created when they built the auditorium. We have a 700-seat auditorium. And the general manager for the auditorium did things in the auditorium. Mm. And that's the job that I was given. And since then, a lot of things have happened. But one of the main things that happened was that we left the auditorium. Well, when I came in, I asked my colleagues the question, how can the Met be additive to the cultural scene instead of just duplicating? Because what the program was doing was, you know, chamber music, classical chamber music, which I love, and of course came from there, trained in Western classical music. But I felt like New York City had plenty and that it wasn't really adding to the scholarship or the collection or the understanding or the audience or building new audiences or bringing new artists or advancing the Met's connection with living artists. So I started doing the program that I did. And then during COVID, we were able to convince the administration that it doesn't belong under education. It is not a flavor of public programs, and it's no longer based in the auditorium. The auditorium is part of the venues that we use, but we use the clusters. We're in every gallery and online and digital. So then it became the live arts department, independent department. The concerts and lectures went back to education, great, where they are happily living with all the other talk programs. And we became really focused only on performance art as a remit. But that's the second step. The third step would be for the Met to understand performance as a curatorial remit, and they're not there yet. And certainly for the time being, it would have to be a non-collecting department. And that's fine. We have non-collecting departments, but we don't have curatorial departments without a collection. So that is going to be a bridge too far. As an independent department that focuses on performance, we get to advance the Met's engagement with living artists, which is really important, especially to the contemporary department. We get to work very closely with the contemporary department when they commission artists who have a performance practice. We sit in an area of the museum that is very audience-focused, which is perfect.
And I was also, I was thinking about the wording of the new department, which I really like, Life Art. And just thinking about all these different institutions who all chose different wordings, so like different ways of describing the art that they work with. Like at the Walker, it's the Performing Arts Department. And then at MoMA, they chose Media and Performance, which makes sense for MoMA, really focusing on modern contemporary art. And then at the Stedelijk, they decided on time-based media.
First of all, there's a hard line between museums that focus on contemporary art and museums that are historical. And those are two different things. And most museums that have either time-based media or performance and media or video performance and media or any combination of that, those are contemporary art museums, and they have curators that deal with media and performance. And when I was at the Whitney for 5.5 years, I was the performance curator. Now, At the Walker is different because what Philip is doing is he is being BAM and the kitchen for the Twin Cities. The Guggenheim has a performing arts series that has nothing to do with the what's going on in the galleries or in the curatorial remit. And then the curatorial area sometimes does performance like Tino Segal or whatever. And there's usually, in those kinds of places, there's usually tension between those two entities. So those are all contemporary art museum. In the historical museums, there is usually some sort of a performance series. It usually sits under either education or public programs or like audience outreach or something. And it's usually either jazz on Friday nights or First Friday at in Brooklyn Museum, which is the best ever. Or worse, it's like programs that are designed to attract the younger demographic. Or just horrible jazz with terrible sound under the stairs. So those are the models in the historical museums. Obviously, the contemporary art museums are much more evolved. And there's tension between the people who do performing arts and whenever that some curator does performance art.
You mentioned this before, too, the kind of the tension between performing arts and performance art. How do you see that difference here? Or how would you feel like there's a difference between a performing arts event within life arts compared to a performance art?
So it's a complicated issue. And in the best cases, really the only difference is that performing artists went to a conservatory for music or dance or theater, and performance artists have MFA degrees. That's it. And in reality, sometimes what happens is that there is performance artists that do actions, the actionists. There's a huge 100-year history of that. And that's a thing, and it's an important thing. But performing art is much more of a collaboration with an audience. It doesn't happen without an audience. Performance art doesn't need anything. Performing artists don't, it doesn't exist without the partnership and the contract with people who have come and are here to see it. And so the dynamic is very different. And when an actionist, I'm just calling it that, walks across a space, a gallery, that's a person with lots of skills in some area walking across. It's not Trisha Brown walking across the gallery. And there is skill in that. And what happened was on this side, we had Marcel Duchamp, who broke skill and said, you know, skill doesn't matter. It's all about the idea, which I actually agree with. But also, it's a problem when you get into performing arts. So for me, to see something that's considered a performance where the artist may have many wonderful ideas and conceptual strength, but actually doesn't know how to use a body, that's a problem. I tend to work with people who have kind of dual skills. For example, Nikhil Chopra, who has theatrical training and has a very strong sense of connecting with an audience and the pacing of a performance. Madeline Hollander, she's someone who lives in both worlds. Or, for example, we did a performance with the Ethiopian-American artist whose name is Sedeye Makonnen. She's not a dancer. She conceived of a work and then she worked with dancers. And so it's just like one of the most beautiful things you'll ever see, and uses her textiles. You have to, at some point, concede that sound and movement have a rigor, and you have to know how to handle them. It's like fire. A lot of performance art has moved away from any kind of skill around performance.
And then I was just wondering, I read the publication you brought out in like 2020,
yeah,
where some of the artists speak about their experience working here. And I was just wondering, like, how does it look like when you invite an artist here? Like, what is kind of the invitation? Are they invited to respond to the building, to the collection? Is it open?
Basically, the invitation is, let's take a walk. The questions that I ask are as basic as, how do you feel about God being your lighting designer? Because if you need, you know, Robert Wilson level of control, then it's not going to work. How do you feel about engaging with the audience and having them literally there, right there with you, making the piece with you, you know, like being present for the making of the piece potentially, or you know, that contract. Mm-hmm. With the, that's like where I live. We usually take a lot of walks. It's very important for me that the invitation is sort of open-ended. So, you know, like when we walked around with Hamed Sino, who goes by H, and so H is from Lebanon and the Middle East, and so the, all of that. And so I said, you know, we're going to walk around the museum, and at the end of our site visit, we're going to go to the temple, because I don't want you to assume that you are required to work in the Temple of Dendur, you know, because Middle East. And he ended up doing a piece for the temple, but not because that was the remit, but because, you know, the building will reveal the project to you. And it, usually the building does reveal the project. Like when we were walking around with the Indian dancer, Bijoini Satpati, we saw the Indian collection and the Islamic collection and the, you know, and the Mughal collection. And the, you know, and we look when they, she was really turned on by the Greek and Roman sculpture court. And then she ended up really kind of homing in on Sam Gilliam, Carousel. And yeah, that piece opened it up for her. Mm-hmm. And that's where she started her piece. And you just never know when that's going to happen. And when it happens, it's very clear. Like, it's just, it just, the collection just revealed itself. Same thing with Madeline Hollander. Oh my God, so many walkthroughs, so many ideas. She's going to do this, she's going to do this, she's going to do this, and she's going to be here and there. And oh my God, so like almost a year of chasing down ideas until she came to the final idea, which we did, which was brilliant. It's such a good piece. Oh my God.
Like in the publication as well, you do mention, you have the interview with Adam Gopnik where he asks you what your dream is, if you have a dream that you haven't been able to pull off. And your answer is that the Met hasn't acquired performance yet, and that's your dream to commission a work that is acquired. And I was actually surprised that the Met has never acquired performance. And again, you do mention this difference between modern contemporary art museums and more historical museums, but your collection in modern and contemporary art is amazing. And at the moment, the contemporary art department, for example, would they be able to acquire performance?
I don't know. Don't think it's a priority right now. That's fine. It'll happen, but it's going to take a little while longer. It's not going to happen now. That's okay.
Are there other ways that you are thinking about what I am calling it, like afterlives of performance, or like kind of the remains of performance? Are there other ways that you're thinking about that?
Yes, all the time.
Yeah.
So the main way is that I'm building a collection, in air quotes, of all of our performances get professionally recorded, multi-camera, edited to within an inch of their life. The edit is a work of art. And so those are all now, we're just finishing a huge year-long project to get them all to be able to be released. If you want, we can give you the, they're all, like most of the work is now on Vimeo, and it will be, eventually it'll be on the Met website, but it takes time to get it up on the Met website, but at least we have our own library, and it's a massive, massive library.
That's
and
amazing.
So researchers can look at it, and it is a collection. It's still a collection.
Yeah.
You know, for better or for worse. And we do get, I would say once every 2-3 months, we get somebody who's working on a dissertation about something, then they need to see videos of this and this. And so now we'll just be able to give them the Vimeo archive link, and they can look at it. Right now, we haven't been there, so we would find it and send it to them.
Mm-hmm.
But we signed contracts with all the artists that this will be available forever for free.
And what are for you like the main reasons to do this work?
Because it is in fact part of the Met's history, and because it happened at the Met, it's historically significant, and it needs to be available to researchers just like, you know, acquired objects. It's just not an object, but it's a work of art. It's the same thing. I mean, some of the things are just like concerts, fine, those are not works of art, those are versions of existing works of art, so we have those too. But like the commissions, the big pieces, the commissions that we do, the site-specific, site-sensitive stuff that we do, you know, those are works of art. And, you know, when I was talking more about acquiring performance, and people just kind of like can't fathom it, I always reference the work of Saul LeWitt, where you get a set of instructions. And if you talk to Li Mingwei, he will explain to you how he structured the sale of his performance work called Sonic Blossom for the MFA in Boston.
For example, I've been in so many archives now, and everyone, you know, museums are less eager to show me correspondence, but the kitchen, for example, is very open and kind of reading correspondence, right? It's a lot of information you get from emails they save,
yeah,
for example.
I don't think that any of my emails will be saved. I don't think they are saved. Mm-hmm. I think that when I leave, it's all going to literally, the Met won't have it. And I've never been given the directive to keep it. So, and I wouldn't even know how. I haven't done that.
I don't do that either, but by going through other people's correspondence, I really realize, especially with performance, it's so much about the work is, because it's not material, you have to figure out what the work is through speaking to the artist, and like all these little details that, you know, you send to each other, that makes the work, like all these little things of like it needs to happen there with these people, or all these little things. How many videos are there?
Hundreds. And then in terms of remnants, we do often have remnants, but we can't keep them because
remnants such as
of works,
objects
or paintings, or you know, that were like that happened during a performance.
But happens with
different things happen, yeah, but we can't keep them
because they're not acquired as artwork, and they're also not going to go into an archive. Yeah, I was wondering, because you mentioned that you will get a new wing for modern contemporary arts, or are your galleries going to be renovated, or is there?
I think they're
be...
building a whole new wing. They're going to demo the current wing and rebuild a new wing.
And do you already know what that would mean for your department, for the life art department?
Not really. I mean, when I was at the Whitney, we were designing the new building, and so I would say 2/3 of my job was involved with how do we make the new building ready for performance. And that was completely integrated into every decision, even the floor. So if you remember, the floor at the Whitney is soft wood.
Every floor of all the galleries.
So that it's not sprung floors, it's not professional ballet floors, but dancers can, people can dance, can move, can spring. The floors have give, and that was intentional. The ceiling copies the ceiling from the Breuer building, which is basically one big grid. So all of the ceilings can support lighting, sound, video, cameras, whatever might be needed for time-based art is ready to go. There's power everywhere. There's conduit for Wi-Fi, for live streaming, for anything that might come, new technology, every gallery is ready. So they can do performance in every gallery. Plus they have the little gallery on the 6th floor, which was originally designed as a performance video gallery, but now they use it for everything, which is great. And they have the actual theater, which has retractable seating. You're welcome. And that beautiful view of the river, but it can also close. Yeah, so I'm very proud of all of that. Because the Whitney is artist forward, and you know, their whole existence is about artists that are emerging now, and you know, whatever American means now, but you know, living artists, and living artists are moving their bodies and moving other people's bodies and doing those kinds of things. So they have to be ready. The Met is not, the contemporary department is half of one department out of 21 collecting departments, collecting areas. So not the same weight. And I do know that this particular director who's with us now is very committed to contemporary art. But, you know, directors come and go. I've only been here a decade and I've been under two, so.
Yeah, I guess we don't have that much time. But I'm just curious what's coming up in your programming. Are you looking forward to?
The summer. Well, we had a giant breakthrough for next year, which is there's an exhibition called Flight into Egypt in the biggest gallery where Sleeping Beauties is now. It's called the Tisch Gallery, and the show is called Flight into Egypt. And at the center of the gallery, the heart of the exhibition, is what's being called the Performance Pyramid. and in that gallery, 900 square feet, tiny, but still, that will feature performances for the duration of the exhibition, and the performances are part of the checklist. That's a first at the Met. I don't know if it's a first elsewhere, but it's definitely a first at the Met.
That they're part of the checklist. What difference does that make for you in your
work? Huge! It makes every difference, because it's not ancillary, it's not reacting to, it's not, and also, it's not just in the galleries, it's literally the art. Mm-hmm. The performance.
It's treated as an artwork.
It changes everything. It changes the budget structure. It changes the way it's planned. It changes our spot in the hierarchy of priorities. It's an artwork, so we're equal to the objects.
And I'm just curious, how does the collaboration come about for an exhibition like that?
So the curator called me and we started talking, and we just have a great connection, and we're doing it together, and it's a beautiful collaboration. And before that, last fall, I had a similarly beautiful collaboration with another curator in the contemporary department on the Jacoby Satterwhite piece, which actually Live Arts led, but in collaboration with the contemporary department. So it's just a personal connection, relationship, mutual respect, love. There was one summer where we had an ongoing performance, like a theatrical performance, all summer long. It was like every 2 or 3 hours, it was like a 45-minute session. It was amazing, and it was shocking how many people said they've never been to a theatrical performance, or they've only been to two theater shows in their lives, or something like that. And I'm like, wow, okay, that's our audience. That's very different from people who choose to go to the Walker, choose to go to the Whitney. You know, the world comes to the Met, so we have a different responsibility, very different.